when you get to the day of judgment, I don't know the thing that's going to be more important than this. The blood of Christ is certainly important. Our faithfulness is certainly important. But heaven and hell certainly can be counted among those things that are important. The idea of many when they talk about heaven is a place where we do our favorite things with our favorite people forever. It's an eternal barbecue with your favorite old pets roaming around. The weather's perfect. George Washington is flipping burgers over here, and Abraham Lincoln is at the smoker. Abigail Adams is putting down the coleslaw. Ben Franklin brings the beans. Dolly Madison, of course, she brought the pies. A further idea is that everyone will be there, no exceptions, because God would never send anyone to that other place. Many refuse to believe that hell even exists. Others make hell out to be a place where Satan is in charge. But the truth is, Satan will be convict number one. Still others want hell to be where all the wicked fun will happen, an eternal party, where you can do anything that you want, and there are no really further any further consequences. The belief of these ideas transforms the thoughts of heaven and hell into something that doesn't truly matter on the day of judgment. But that's not the way it is. Heaven is real. It's really there. The one who died and resurrected from the dead after 3 days, after having told his disciples that he was going to do so, that person is the one that told us heaven is going to be there. That same person tells us about hell. You can't believe one without the other. They are taught by the same Bible, by the same person, and both are just as real as the other. Hell is a real place. Matthew chapter 10, verse 28, we read the words of Jesus here, that we ought to have some fear with regard to this place we're discussing. Matthew chapter 10 and verse 28 says, "And fear not them which shall kill the body, but are not able to kill the soul, but rather fear him which is able to destroy both soul and body in hell." So you find, first of all, in this passage, that hell is a place of destruction. It's a place where the soul even can be destroyed. It's a place where the Father in heaven, he has charge of that place, and he has the ability to destroy both body and soul in hell. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 22, in that great Sermon on the Mount, Jesus tells us more about this real place. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 22, we read, "But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of the judgment, and whosoever shall say to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, but whosoever shall say, Thou fool, shall be in danger of hell fire." Well, without that word fire on the end, we're not too understanding about what the nature of hell is. We know it's about destruction already, but this kind of adds a little bit to it. What nature does what form does the destruction take? It's hell fire. Fire. Fire is the most destructive of things that we know here on this earth. Now we understand that heaven and hell are not physical realities. They are spiritual realities. But when you compare them to earthly things, you come to understand that when you're talking about hell, it's like fire. He uses the term hell fire. What does that mean? We're going to find later that nothing is burned up in hell. It doesn't. It isn't destroyed permanently, but there are a lot of aspects to fire. It renders things that it touches useless. It causes destruction on those things where they cannot grow anymore. They can't do anything anymore. They are destroyed. Fire does that. Not long ago, in Bastrop, Texas, which was near where I used to live, not Carrizo Springs, but before that. In Bastrop, Texas, there was a forest fire. Bastrop is a place known as the Lost Pine, so there's a lot of fuel for the fire. I drove there one day on a preaching appointment, I believe it was, and all these pretty green pines, it was just black charcoalness. Everything was destroyed in the fire's wake. And I can imagine that, spiritually speaking, that's what happens in hell. That whatever is there is rendered ugly, is rendered useless, cannot be used any longer. It's hellfire. Matthew chapter 18 and verse 9. Matthew chapter 18, verse 9. And if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out, and cast it from thee. It is better for thee to enter into life with one eye, rather than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire. Once again, the idea of destruction is used. Again, let me point out that it's not something that will be quenched. Not a fire that can burn out. It simply continues. Fire will never be quenched. Mark chapter 9, verse 43. Mark chapter 9, verse 43. And if thy hand offend thee, cut it off. It is better for thee to enter into life maimed than having two hands to go into hell, into the fire that never shall be quenched. It's never used up. It's always there. You don't get relieved. It's a fire that keeps going. It's prepared for a particular class of people. Matthew chapter 25 and verse 41. Matthew 25, verse 41. We are very sensitive about our neighborhoods. We're very careful when we have people living around us that they do the right things. You live in a certain part of town and you notice that there's some people that don't live right, that don't obey laws, that don't act the way other people would like them to act, and you don't want to be around those people. Hell is one of those places. In Matthew chapter 25 and verse 41, we read, "Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels." People have the wrong idea about hell. They think the devil is the chief jailer, and he has his assistants going around and making it bad for everyone or starting the party or whatever it is that they think about hell. But the idea here is that it was a place prepared for him. Not for his benefit, but to put him away, to isolate him, to get him out of the way of that which is holy and good and right. That's the idea here. Who will your neighbor be if you end up in hell? Your neighbor and the number one convict in the place will be Satan himself. That old serpent that caused us so much problem in the Garden of Eden. That's who it will be. That's who your neighbor will be. Prepared for the devil and his angels. Luke chapter 3 and verse 17 gives us some idea of what God thinks about those who will not be in heaven. Luke chapter 3 and verse 17. This is the preaching of John the Baptist, speaking of the Christ, whose fan is in his hand, and he will thoroughly purge his floor, and will gather the wheat into his garner, but the chaff will be burned with unquenchable fire. The chaff. That's who will be in the fire. Now, what is he saying about that? He's giving you a picture of how things are separated spiritually speaking. I don't know if you know how in ancient times, and probably up until the 1800s or so, some people still did it this way. But you gathered the grain, and you put it in a big circle, and you had your oxen tromp on it. And then you had the separating time, and you usually did this on the top of the hill to use the wind. And you took the fan, which was, we might say, it kind of looks like a garbage can lid, something like that, and you put some of this beaten up grain on it, and you throw it up into the air. What comes it back down? The heavy things, the things that are going to be saved. What blows away? The chaff, the waste, the things that you can't use. That's what's going to end up in hell. The chaff, the wheat, is going into the barn, into the garner. It will be used. It will be protected. It will be blessed. For the chaff, that's what hell is for. Jude verses 6 and 7. Jude brings to mind a time in the Old Testament where God gave us a picture, as well as you can in this physical realm, of what hell is going to be like. Jude verses 6 and 7. And the angels which kept not their first estate, but left their own habitation, he hath reserved in everlasting chains under darkness unto the judgment of the great day. Even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh, are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. It was a picture. Imagine, if you will, Abraham and his children and his household surrounding him, looking over to the east from where he was. And there, in the vicinity of the Dead Sea, there were cities, the cities of the plains. There was a sea there, but it wasn't as big as it is now, I don't think. And then comes the fire out of heaven. It smoked, it smelled, and everything it touches was destroyed. It burned up the grasslands, and it burned up the city, and everything that was around it was destroyed. That's the picture of hell, according to Jude. Matthew chapter 23, excuse me, Revelation chapter 20 and verse 14. Revelation 20 and verse 14, we are introduced. We've already seen that that hell is the hell of fire. But Revelation 20, verse 14, calls it a lake of fire. And death and hell were cast into the lake of fire. This is the second death. A lake. Now, there are many sizes of lakes. But one thing we know about a lake, it's not a small body of water. There are different sizes. There's Lake Superior, and there's some of the tiny lakes in Texas. We used to vacation at a place called Inks Lake. It's on the Highland Chains, not too far from Burnett, Texas, which is not too far from Austin. And it was a lake so small you couldn't put a motorboat on it. I think Dad liked the concept of no motorboats, so later on we went to a place called Dangerfield, Texas. Probably the only way you ever knew about Dangerfield, Texas is because there was a gunman there back in the early 80s, I believe it was, maybe late 70s. They went into the Baptist church and started shooting people. That was probably in the national news. You might have heard of that. We were there that weekend. We were in the Church of Christ, and we were never so glad to be members of the church in our lives because there was a gunman over the Baptist church. Anyway, the state park there at Dangerfield had a small spring-fed lake. But still, as small as that lake was, it was plenty of water for all the people that were there at that state park. It was plenty big enough for everyone. Maybe not for a motorboat, but it was big enough. Then you go to lakes like Amistad down in the Texas border to the south, and Lake Texoma to the north, and you get the idea that there's some lakes around there that you have to look pretty hard to see over to the other side. Big lakes for that part of the country. And so it is that this lake of fire gives us a sense of proportion How big is this fire? Is there enough for everyone? Yes, I think there's enough for everyone that is to be cast into it. It's a lake of fire. Matthew chapter 23, verse 33, we introduce another word to this concept of hell. Matthew chapter 23, verse 33. It's a word we're told when we're young that we don't parents don't want to hear us say this word, at least the shortened form of it anyway. Matthew chapter 23, verse 33. It's a serious word. Those that are going to the lake of fire are marked as with this word. Matthew 23, verse 33. And when the multitude heard this, I must be at the wrong place. 23, verse 33. All right. Wherefore, behold, excuse me, verse 33. Ye serpents, ye generation of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell? Those that are in the clutches of hell, if you will, in that lake, because of the life that they have lived, are damned. That is the realm of the damned. That's where they go. Those who are not blessed are damned. Those that are not saved are damned. And so, we find that the realm of that is the realm of hell. John chapter 5 and verse 29, we learn that that word damnation, or similar word, is used by the Apostle John, giving the words of Christ here. John chapter 5 and verse 29, John writing the words of Jesus about the subject of the resurrection. John chapter 5, verse 29, verse 28 reads, "Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and shall come forth, they that have done good, unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil, unto the resurrection of damnation." Speaking of hell, the lake of fire, it's a place of damnation. If you were in the environs of Jerusalem during the time of Christ, you would have known where the city dump is. Now, I remember when I was young, the city dump, kind of like what you saw on Mayberry. It was a place outside of town where every few months they would have to burn things or it got out of hand. They don't allow you to burn things anymore, but during the time of Jesus, there was a valley on the south side of Jerusalem called the Valley of Hinnom. It was a place where many, many centuries before, there was a temple and an altar to false gods. There were those that passed their children through to the false gods, through the fire, that is. The children were burned. And then the skeletons were placed in jars, and some of those jars have been found there. The child sacrifice was there. And so nobody could build anything in that valley anymore. It couldn't be used for anything else, so that's where they took the trash. If you had a dead animal in the street, it was going to end up in the Valley of Venom, in the trash pile. If you had refuse that from those feast days, it was going over in the valley, and it was going to be burned. That was the place that you did it, and everyone knew it. You could smell the smoke. You could see the flames at night. It was an awful place. The Valley of Hinnom, and that's where we get the Greek word Gehenna. And that's the word for hell in the Greek text. Matthew chapter 8 and verse 12. Jesus begins to speak about something called outer darkness. Matthew chapter 8, verse 12. That valley wasn't on fire all the time, but after the feast days and other big days. Of course, it had a great deal of fire there, but sometimes it was silent and cool, but it was a place where no one went, unless it was in the darkness, and only the worst kind of people went there, those planning evil deeds. And so outer darkness came to represent hell in a different way. Matthew chapter 8, verse 12. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Weeping and gnashing of teeth. What does that suggest to you? That there are emotions involved with this place of outer darkness. Weeping. Weeping because you could have gone somewhere else, perhaps. Gnashing of teeth. The regret of having made poor choices. The regret of not being with those you knew before. The regret of not being pleasing to God. Of having had a choice and have chosen poorly. These are the kinds of ideas that I associate with this outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Perhaps it will be because of the pain involved, because there are other things that are involved in places like this. Matthew chapter 22, verse 13, chapter 25, verse 30, also talk about this outer darkness. Mark chapter 9, verse 48, and this is probably the only thing that I'm going to surprise anybody with this lesson. Because if it's a place of fire, how can we say that the worm dieth not? And that's what Jesus says about those that are the damned. Mark chapter 9 and verse 48. Verse 47, and if an eye offend thee, pluck it out. It's better for thee to enter into the kingdom of God with one eye than having two eyes to be cast into hell fire, where their worm dieth not, and the fire is not quenched. Somewhere in your margin, put Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 24. Isaiah chapter 6, verse 24. And then turn with me there. Isaiah chapter 66, verse 24. You may recognize that this is the last book in Isaiah. Isaiah is full of warnings about the apostasy of his day. He preached for many decades, and it was during a time when the northern kingdom of Assyria were threatening to take Israel into captivity, and finally did. But it was because of the sins of the people. Let's notice, beginning in verse 18, "For I know their works and their thoughts. It shall come that I will gather all nations and tongues, and they shall come and see my glory. And I will set a sign among them, and I will send those that escape of them unto the nations, to Tarshish, Pul, and Lud, that draw the bow, to Tubal and to Javan, to the isles afar off, that they have not heard my name, neither have they seen my glory. And they shall declare my glory among the Gentiles. And they shall bring all your brethren for an offering unto the Lord out of the nations upon horses and in chariots and in litters and upon mules and upon swift beasts to my holy mountain Jerusalem, saith the Lord. As the children of Israel bring an offering in a clean vessel unto the house of the Lord, and I will also take of them for priests and for Levites, saith the Lord. For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain. And it shall come to pass that from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another, shall all flesh come to worship before me, saith the Lord. And now, if those new pews haven't been too comfortable and you haven't fallen asleep, listen to this passage above the others. And they shall go forth and look upon the carcasses of the men that have transgressed against me. For their worm shall die not, neither shall their fire be quenched. And they shall be an abhorring unto all flesh." Speaking of the judgment of mankind before God. God the Avenger and God the King. God says, some things are right, some things are wrong. And those that keep on doing the wrong, it's where the worm dieth not, where the fire will not be quenched. Hell is a real place. And we can't find any reference in the Bible to anything good in hell. read from cover to cover, if you will, and you're not going to find anything good about hell. Now, I know that in the King James Version, the word hell is used for other things. Matthew 16 and verse 18, the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. In new versions, it's not the word hell. It's the word Hades, because the word hell means hidden place in English. And so the word Hades means hidden too. And so the word was used not only for the place of final judgment, but for the place where we go when we die. The word is Gehenna for the final place of destruction. And it's the word Hades or Hades for the word that means the paradise or the place Tartarus that we go before final disposition. Heaven is a real place too. The same Bible, the same witness, the same Lord that tells us about hell tells us about heaven. It's a place of reward. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 12. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 12. Those that have the necessity of being persecuted will find that if they endure, they will receive a reward in heaven. Matthew chapter 5, verse 12. Rejoice and be exceeding glad, for great is your reward in heaven. For so persecuted they the prophets which were before you. A reward in a real place. Now, I've already said that these are spiritual places, but that doesn't make them less real. The place where God exists, the throne of God. If God is a spirit, then the place must be spiritual. Doesn't mean it's a real place like Olympus that was considered in the Greek pantheon. It's not a place like that. It's a place where God's Spirit dwells. It's the dwelling place of the Father, Matthew 5, verse 16. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father, which is in heaven. That's where He is. It's a place of reward. It's the dwelling place of the Father. Verse 34 says it's God's throne. God's will is done there, Matthew chapter 6, verse 10. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. It's a place where God reigns, where He is. Jesus is at His right hand. And so Jesus is there too. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 33, speaking to the people of Israel at the time of the Pentecost, after Jesus rose again, Peter stands up to speak to them and says, therefore, being by the right hand of God exalted, and having received of the Father the promise of the Holy Ghost, He hath shed forth this which ye now see and hear. He is exalted by the right hand of the Father, who is in heaven, which is a place of reward. God's will is done there. Jesus is at His right hand. It's the place to safeguard one's treasure. Matthew chapter 6, verse 20. We reach for treasure on this earth, but Jesus tells us to put that treasure in heaven. So in spiritual things. Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust doth corrupt, and where thieves do not break through nor steal. That's the place where a true treasure lies. It's a place prepared. A place to safeguard one's treasure, and it's a place prepared for those that choose properly, that obey the gospel, that do what Jesus says, that obey the Father, that do not work iniquity. This is a place prepared. John chapter 14, verses 1 through 3. Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house, that further identifies this, does it not? If God is on His throne in heaven, then the Father's house must be heaven. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also. Now, I don't want you to get the idea that this is a place like one of those golfing country clubs or golfing communities. Where in the center you have the golf course, and there's all these houses around it. Just everybody's got their small cart, and they pull on the golf course. They have a high old time, and they go home. That everyone has their individual place. King James Version kind of says that. But I saw this John Wayne movie one time. He was a cop in Chicago. I think it's Brannigan is the one it was. He goes to London or some place in England, and he has to check in at kind of a hotel-type place. And the title that was on that building was Yorkshire Mansions. The English word is involved here, mansions. Does mansions always mean a separate place for everyone? No, it doesn't mean that. That's not what this English word meant at that particular time. No, it is a place prepared, a dwelling place. Some translations read, "In my Father's house are many rooms." Others say dwelling places. The RSV, I think, says that. And that's the closest I think we can come to it here. When you go to heaven, you have a place prepared, a place where your treasures still abide. A physical thing? I don't think so. But a spiritual thing, yes, which is no less real. We exist on the spiritual realm as well. It's a place to safeguard your treasure. It's a place prepared. Notice also 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1. 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 1. For we know that our earthly house of this tabernacle, we're dissolved. We have a building of God, and house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. Paul says this is a real place we're considering. A place that is made without hands of man. It's a place prepared by God for you and for me, the faithful. This is a real place. Jesus says it's a real place, and the apostles after him said it's a real place. They were counting on it. Now, how do we know? How do we really, really know? And many other signs, truly, did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that ye might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing ye might have life through his name. Those same miracles, they put a stamp of approval on everything that Jesus said. They approve what we find in the Old Testament, because Jesus said Moses was real, that Jonah was real. People laugh today about Noah and the flood. That never happened. Jesus says it did. And Jesus rose from the dead. About Noah and the big fish, Jonah and the big fish. That's just a story. But Jesus says, no, that's real. Jesus talks about Moses, and the commentators these days talk about Moses as not a real character, but a character that was that evolved over centuries. And during the time of Daniel, these books of the Pentateuch were put together. But Jesus says, Moses wrote those things. And so when Jesus talks about heaven and hell, he rises from the dead, calls Lazarus forth from the grave. When he touches the beer in Nain, and a man rises from the dead. When he turns water into wine, when he speaks to the winds and the sea, peace be still. And when he walks on water, I believe that there is a heaven and a hell, because Jesus said so. And that's what you need to believe too. And you need to prepare for that. Because a certain class of people will go to heaven, and a certain class of people will go to hell. And you need to avoid hell. And you need to tell people that they need to avoid hell. If you love mankind, love your brother, love your family, you need to tell them that hell is real. And you need to show them in the Scripture the marvelous place called heaven, so that they can go there, that they can understand what it is. We have a choice, and that choice matters. The choice is heaven or hell. The choice is unbelief or righteousness. This is what we must choose today. Matthew chapter 7, verses 13 and 14, and this great Sermon on the Mount that Jesus preached, he gives you this choice here. He tells you about the reality of it. He says in verse 13 of Matthew 7, "Enter ye in at the straight gate, For wide is the gate and broad is the way that leadeth to destruction, and many there be which go in thereat. Because straight is the gate and narrow is the way which leadeth unto life, and few there be that find it. Few there be that find it. I know that few. I know who they are. They're those that read their Bibles. They're those that are faithful. There are those that believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. There are those that have the blood applied to them. That's who's on that narrow way. There are those that tell others. We are wise to tell others. Matthew 25, verses 31 and following. Before we read that text, I want you to think about that broad way once again. How hard is it to get on the broad way? That's the easiest thing you'll ever do. Just say, it don't matter to me. You don't have to be particularly bad. You just have to not really care. That's all you have to do. You have to be ignorant. That's what you have to do to get on the broad way. It's easy. Everybody's on it. Except for one class of people. And that's the saved. Those who believe and obey Jesus Christ. Sheep or goat? Matthew chapter 25, verse 31. Matthew chapter 25, verse 31. When the Son of Man shall come in His glory, and all the holy angels with Him, then shall he sit upon the throne of His glory. And before Him shall be gathered all nations, and He shall separate them one from another, as a shepherd divideth his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right hand and the goats on the left. Now notice, the sheep are already sheep. The goats are already goats. At this time of judgment, they're simply separated. One will go to heaven, one will go to hell. Now who's going to make it? Verse 34, then shall the king say unto them on his left hand, come, ye blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me in. Naked, and ye clothed me. I was sick, and ye visited me. I was in prison, and ye came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave thee drink? When saw we thee a stranger, and took thee in, or naked, and clothed thee? Or when saw we thee sick or in prison and came unto thee? And the king shall answer and say unto them, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye have done it unto one of the least of these my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Now, some people may be confused about what Jesus is saying. Is he saying that only the people who do good are going to heaven? Well, these people are doing good for a reason. Remember the two great commands that we find Jesus talking about? Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. Now, when you love your neighbor as yourself, you're obeying a command. You're doing the will of the Father. Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of the Father which is in heaven. Matthew 7, 21 through 23. And so it's important that we do these things because Jesus commanded us to. Verse 41. Then shall he say unto them on the left hand, depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devil and his angels. For I was an hungered, and ye gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and ye gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and ye took me not in. Naked, and ye clothed me not. Sick, and in prison, and ye visited me not. Then shall they also answer him, saying, Lord, when saw we thee an hungered, or a thirst, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister unto thee? Then shall he answer them, saying, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as ye did it not to one of these, the least of these, ye did it not to me. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into life eternal. Those that had not obeyed, that had not fed, that had not clothed, that had not visited, they're marked. They had not obeyed that second great command to love their neighbor as themselves. That command was given by God, so they did not honor God in doing this. And so, one side, the goats, they went into everlasting punishment, and the righteous into life eternal. Are you saved or are you damned? Maybe you never looked at Mark 16:16 like this, but you need to. Mark 16:16, Jesus gives the Great Commission and he says very simply, "He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved." Those are the sheep. Those are the ones that have obeyed. Those are the ones that have honored God and have looked after their neighbor. But he that believeth not shall be damned. The damned are the goats. They had not obeyed the Father, had not honored him, had not obeyed him whatsoever. They're going into eternal destruction. Notice there that the same Lord talks about eternity in two ways, heaven and hell. It's going to be important on the day of judgment. You need to make a choice now if you have not. If we can assist you in your obedience, don't wait another minute. If you know that you need to be baptized for the remission of your sins, don't leave this place without having obeyed the Father. It's everlastingly important. If you've fallen from the good way, ask the Lord for forgiveness. He has promised to forgive. And if it's a public matter, make it known publicly so that we can pray with you. If we can assist you in your obedience, won't you come and sit on one of these front pews as we stand, as we sing.